You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. We have the weekend's cinema choices up for discussion today, and on our silver screen is Rebecca Miller's quirky rom-com Maggie's Plan, a bizarre new Danish comedy called Men and Chicken, and a documentary about the death of Mark Duggan that sparked the 2011 Tottenham riots here in London called The Hard Stop. And talking me through all three films is film critic Tara Judah. Tara, welcome to the show. Now, let's begin with Rebecca Miller's new drama, Maggie's Plan. Now, here we meet Maggie, played by Greta Gerwig, who is desperate to have a child and falls in love with a married man, John, portrayed by Ethan Hawke. 2 years and one child later, Maggie falls out of love with John and eventually tries to reunite him with his former wife. Not exactly the usual setup for a rom-com. Let's hear a clip.
Maggie, what are you doing here?
John and I are in trouble. There might be an opportunity to get the two of you back together.
You want to make sure you don't feel guilty, so you're going to manipulate us all. Leave.
Leave? Please, you want me to leave? Okay, leave. I'm leaving. Okay, leave. Sorry.
Why can't you just break up with him like any normal human being?
Because it would be such a waste.
A waste? He's not a paper product.
I'm in.
Tara, I have not seen this film yet. Just judging from the trailer, however, it does strike me that it's not exactly what you'd call a romantic comedy at all, and perhaps more in the quirky realm of things such as Greta Gerwig's role in Frances Ha. She comes across very Frances Ha-ish in the trailer. I want you to tell me that this film is amazing. And if you're not going to tell me it's amazing, we'll end the show right here.
Well, that's unfortunate. I don't think I'm going to go as far as to say it's amazing. I did enjoy Maggie's Plan. It is a really entertaining American indie quirky film, very much what you're used to from Greta Gerwig. But it also is a romantic comedy. And I think this is where the tension is for a lot of audiences, or where it's going to be potentially. She is kind of the new Woody Allen. She has set herself up as somebody who is having these amazing romance films set in New York. New York is a very big part of the film, as it does is in many of Woody Allen's films. And she's kind of a neurotic character. And we've come to know and love this from Greta Gerwig. I think if you love Greta Gerwig, you're probably going to really enjoy this film. But if the things that have become her kind of tropes of American indie cinema irritate you, then this one is probably going to get up your nose as well.
There's much has been said about that Greta Gerwig kind of character, perhaps that she's been typecast into these sorts of roles. She's quite kooky. As I mentioned, Frances Ha probably is the embodiment of that sort of Greta Gerwig character that we've all come to know now. But you just made the comparison to Woody Allen there, and Woody Allen plays those sorts of characters. He's been doing that for basically his entire career. Is there anything particularly wrong with Greta Gerwig typecasting herself into those sorts of roles?
I don't think so at all. In fact, I think that what we get is a really naturalistic performance. I think Greta Gerwig is very good at playing herself, which is why she does that in these films. And I don't think that there's necessarily anything wrong with being the kind of actor or actress who knows what their limits are and plays well to it. And also, she knows her strengths. She has a very lanky kind of bodily movement, and she moves through spaces awkwardly. She plays off that as physical comedy. It's very slapstick-like. She's done it in Frances Ha. She's done it in previous works that she's collaborated with her partner, Noah Baumbach. We saw it in Mistress America, and we see it again here. And I think that it's kind of charming, personally. But I think that it really is polarizing in the sense that you either find Greta Gerwig very charming and you will be won over by her very self-reflexive, intellectualizing, cerebral chat. This film has a kind of indie cinema checklist, you know, professors, plaid, beautiful costumes, books with shelves and that just are miles high, all of that sort of academic middle class stuff. This film definitely appeals to that audience. But where it becomes really interesting is that it actually is a love triangle and a romantic comedy flipped on its head. So we do have these two women who are the central characters, which is Greta Gerwig and Julianne Moore, polarized by Ethan Hawke's character, John, who is a frustrated writer who really needs assistance with his novel. And Greta Gerwig feels like she's saving him, essentially, by marrying him. She's got this deep desire to nurture something. And this comes out not just in her desire to have a child, but also in hooking up with John. And we see her nurture him into a position where she just can't stand him anymore. She's become secondary. So even though she has agency, she doesn't know how to use it. And I think both of the female characters in this film, they suffer from that very new-edged portrayal of feminism where they have agency, but they still are hindered by their connection to a man. The two women have conversations that mostly revolve around the man. This film barely passes the Bechdel test, but it is still a female-led comedy drama. It is very much a woman's story. And I think it's really fascinating that what Rebecca Miller is doing is that she's playing with these ideas of gender, and she's questioning the roles and what the motivations and what the position of where that's going to go to now is in a contemporary feminist, not quite feminist society.
Now, we're going to move on to real Danish accents in a moment, but first, we have an artificial Danish accent in this film, courtesy of Julianne Moore. Just looking at her in the trailer, she seems to speak rather strangely. How does it come across in the film?
I'll be honest, I didn't realise it was Danish at first. I thought she was just doing a generic German, Eastern European accent. Absolutely. And I think what the accent does, and it, you know, I think it should be criticised that it's not a perfect accent, but it gives her this endearing quality to her character, because she's a very harsh character. She's drawn as the harsh other woman. And the only way in which they really can bring her back from that is to give her something endearing, which is the way that she says things like Pussy Wyatt, because she has a kind of lisp or a kind of not quite control of the language. And so it's played for laughs. It is played broadly for comedy. It's very bawdy in that sense. Like I said, there's a slapstick humour to this film. But it also gives her a softening so that she's not just the harsh other woman.
Maggie's Plan is out now in the United Kingdom, Ireland, and Australia, amongst other territories as well. Well, let's move on now to an actual Danish comedy, that being Men and Chicken. This is the latest film from director Anders Thomas Jensen, and it has a rather absurd storyline, to say the least. Tara, fill us in, perhaps, if you can, on what exactly is going on in this film.
That's quite a hard task. This is a very strange, very interesting film, and absurd is absolutely the right word to describe it. So we have two brothers at the beginning of the film, Elias, played by Mads Mikkelsen, and Gabriel, who is played by David Danzig. And we know both of these actors from much more serious films. We've, you know, seen them in dramas, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, A Royal Affair, Salvation, Hannibal. These are very serious actors, and they are doing bawdy comedy. So the two brothers, who are half-brothers, find out as their dad, or the man who has been their dad, passes away, he puts a video on, and it tells them that they're actually not full brothers, they have different mothers, and that he wasn't their father at all. They were kind of given up for adoption. And so they go to this very strange small island to find their father, this man who is pushing 100 years old. And when they get there, they find three other extremely strange half-brothers. All five half-brothers have cleft palates. They have some kind of irrational anger. They beat each other senselessly over the head with chickens, planks of wood, enormous comedy-shaped pots. This is a very strange setup for a film. And so Gabriel, who really is, you know, the kind of messenger from God character, it's no coincidence that that's what his name is, he's come there to find the answers from his dad. This is a very much a, you know, fallen angel comes to meet his maker. He wants to find out the answers to who his mother was, why all of their mothers reportedly died in childbirth, what it is that has created their strange characters and why they don't fit into society, why they have so much trouble meeting women, why they're complete outcasts. And all we get is more and more strange toppled on top of each other. This is a baffling and incredible film. It's got layers of commentary about evolution. There's so much science and philosophy in the text. It's definitely a film that's questioning religion. This film questions the very understanding of human nature, I think. It is also comedic and unsettling. Sometimes you're not sure whether you should be laughing or afraid. And it has a really unnerving sense that is set up by this very beautiful cinematography and incredible set design. It's filmed in an old abandoned sanatorium that is just magnificent. And the detail in and the lighting and the use of film form is stunning. But the film itself is very arresting and I would say disarming. And I think it will really... It requires repeat viewing, I think, to understand exactly what's going on. I think it's very dense, very beautiful, but absolutely confounding.
Nothing strikes my interest more than an abandoned sanatorium. The concept of this whole dark comedy thing being packaged into something that is quite palatable, that reminds me of something like The Lobster, which I felt was quite unsettling, yet it was so beautiful to watch and so bizarre in the way it communicated its message. It made you want to consume it even more. You mentioned that the cinematography in this is completely beautiful. Was that enough to make you sit there and enjoy it all the way through? Or was the darkness perhaps a little bit much at some times?
I think what really is the hook for this film is that you can't quite place your finger on what's going to happen next. It's not a very easily predictable film. In one sense, it is. You know that there's a literal and figurative basement where the repressed ideas are going to come back up from. That's very cinematic. We have that from films like Psycho that, you know, very deeply steeped in our cinema history. But what really propels you to continue watching this film is that you're not sure whether or not ultimately it's a comedy, a mystery, a horror film. The genre hybridity in this film is amazing and so seamlessly done that it's so arresting to watch. You just don't know whether or not you're about to laugh or if you should be afraid. And I found that a really fascinating experience, being very uncertain. The cues are there, I think, but that they're always undermined by something else. So you've got beautiful cinematography, beautiful light, beautiful imagery, but something dark is always looming just around the corner.
That's Men and Chicken, which is out now in the United Kingdom and Ireland, and will be showing at the Melbourne International Film Festival later this month. A bit of a taste of home there, Tara. Now, our final film today takes us to the streets of London for a documentary about the 2011 shooting of Mark Duggan by the Metropolitan Police. Duggan was a young black British man whose death sparked riots throughout London. Since the media and public furor died down soon after those riots and the news had moved on, two of Duggan's friends, Marcus and Curtis, have been trying to fight for justice and against daily discrimination. Tara, this is an ideal moment for a film like this to be released with the current troubles between black communities and the police over in the United States and the global reaction that it's caused as well. Do you think that timeliness is going to maybe increase some of the attention that the film does get?
Absolutely. I think it's worth saying that that was not a cynical decision by the distributor. It was always slated to come out this week. But I think that absolutely this film now will get probably a wider audience, which is an important thing. It does touch on a really important issue. And I think what's most fascinating about this film is that instead of looking just at Mark Duggan's family, the emotional effects on the people that have been left behind, it also goes a really strong way to creating the much needed backstory of why these sorts of events have taken place and what is it in our society that has such social disharmony. There are so many motivations in this film that I think just knowing about Mark Duggan's shooting and knowing about his death and the riots that were sparked afterwards, you wouldn't know about what else happened on the actual council estate and in the area of Tottenham that led to this event, because there's decades of history that come before it. So in 1985, Constable PC Blakewater was shot dead in the estate in another riot that had broken out there. That history persists. It kind of carries through. And we learn about, through the study of just two people, the friends of Mark Duggan, how the history of growing up on that council estate, how the history of being completely disillusioned with authority and society, feeling as though the only people you can go to are people who won't help you, people who are against you. That's the police, the courts of justice, the system, and the way in which you think how completely, absolutely broken by that you must feel. Where do you look to next? And I think the film really focuses on those two men because it wants to show us that there's so much more involved in this than just the one shooting, the one killing. I mean, obviously Mark Duggan's life was, I don't want to play that down, it's very important and it's tragic that event took place, but it looks at other motivators beyond that, and I think that really is the strength of the documentary, that it's not just trying to piece together one event or say how the hard stop happened. I mean, those are things that I think the filmmaker admits it's too hard to kind of get into, plus for legal reasons he wouldn't have had great access to the actual immediate family. So looking at these two friends gives us a different view and how hard it is for them to put their lives together now when they're unemployed, potentially maybe going to prison, when they've got anger and frustration that they don't know where to put that, and that they still feel as though there is no apology to their community.
We'll talk a little bit more about this in just a moment. First, though, here's a clip of the film.
I'm trying to not be a product of my environment. And I'm trying to break this mold, this cycle. I want the job. I want to be successful. I don't want to be a one of these race mans that just sits on the sofa all day watching daytime telly. That ain't me.
Hey, you're trying to rally me?
This is my mold, brother.
I'm still struggling to get a job, man, and it's doing my head in because it's like, why am I doing it? It's for the kids, isn't it? Do you get what I'm saying? It's for the boys, man.
Tara, I was living in Melbourne in 2011 and I only got to see these riots happening on the news. I now live in London and I know Tottenham relatively well. It does strike me though that thinking back to the way that the riots were reported, there seemed to be two different stories happening at the same time. One of them being the cause of the riots and the other being what was happening in the riots themselves. And I mean, a lot of the repercussions of those riots didn't have much to do with the motivations of the riots themselves. And I think the news media had a little bit of trouble trying to blend those two things together and working out what might actually be achieved by what was transpiring here. How much does the documentary hone in on what happened during the riots compared to what actually caused them?
I think that that's a really good question. So the way the film sets itself up is actually starts with a quote from Martin Luther King, which is about rioting being the language of the unheard. This is what happens when people are oppressed repeatedly. And one of the characters we're introduced to, Marcus, one of Mark Duggan's friends, he was caught on CCTV as one of the instigators of the riot. He was involved in setting the first police car on fire. And we get to know him very well through the process of the documentary. And one of the things that he does come to realise is that, you know, it wasn't necessarily that that was the right thing to do. And obviously he didn't intend for there to be then days and days of rioting that led to five deaths over, you know, millions of pounds worth of damage to people's residences and businesses. He says, and they both say, both the boys in the film say, you know, Tottenham is my home. I didn't want to set my home on fire. I didn't want to create this kind of panic and problem in my community. This is where I live. Nobody wants that. But what happens is that you have so much anger and so much oppression that energy has to go somewhere. And it comes out. And I think the film does try to explain why that single event of Mark Duggan's shooting did lead to these riots, and then what the aftermath of that is. And also that, you know, those are two little pictures that we see on the news. There is so much more history and there is so much more context to go with that.
Indeed. The Hard Stop premiered at last year's Toronto International Film Festival and is released in the United Kingdom today. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to Tara Judah. You have been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time on Monday when we'll be rounding up the week in art. But for now, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.